Okay, good morning. I'm calling to order this meeting of the House Children, Families, Finance, and Policy Committee. Apologies, we're starting a few minutes late. We had some technical difficulties. We've been having some troubles with videos and want to make sure that we could play them, and hopefully that will end up being the case. Let's have Mr. Rohrer, if you could please start us off by taking the roll. Thank you.
Chair Pinto.
Present.
Vice Chair Keeler. Representative Burkle.
Oh, and I'm mute.
Present.
Representative Coulter.
Present.
Representative Davis.
Present.
Representative Hansen.
I think, oh yeah, it was a little delayed. And I should have noted that Lee Daniels is excused if you'd said Lee Daniels' name. Yeah.
Representative Hemmingson-Yeager.
Present.
Representative Hicks.
Present.
Representative Hudson.
Present.
Representative Katisa-Watoon.
Also a little delayed.
Representative Lee. Representative Nelson.
Present.
Representative Perez Vega.
Present.
Representative Zalesnikar.
Present.
And we do have a quorum, and I'm going to continue to spread the opportunity when it comes to the minutes, and so seeing if anybody would like to move approval of the March 12th minutes. Any interest in that? Representative Nelson, okay, we'll go to you. Representative Nelson moves approval of the March 12th minutes. Any additions or corrections to those minutes, members? And seeing none, all in favor of approval of the March 12th minutes, pardon me, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Okay, that motion passes. Thanks for that. And so, members, a number of bills to get through today, and so we will just get going. So, yeah, Representative Hicks, head on up. Representative Hicks moves House File 3678 for re-referral to the General Register, as we do not anticipate a cost. And Representative Hicks, please begin to present your bill once you get settled in.
Thank you so much, Chair and Committee. I am here today back with the Diaper Bank. Last year, we passed support for the Diaper Bank to really help families and children and prevent children from having medical conditions and issues that were caused by poverty, by the lack of their family's ability to purchase diapers. The organization reached out mid-session and was doing such an amazing job, but they had run into a few differences in costs, and so we need to restructure some of those things to allow this great work to continue. I did bring a testifier with me to help explain any other information or questions that the committee may have.
Thank you, Representative Hicks, and so please, if you can identify yourself, share your preferred pronouns if you're comfortable with that, and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Hicks. My name is Deirdre Conzer, and I am the Executive Director of the Diaper Bank of Minnesota.
And please proceed with your testimony. Thanks.
Okay.
Oh, I'm sorry. Or I think perhaps you're just here to answer questions. I'm sorry. Is that correct, or did you have some testimony? Ms. Conzer?
I was told that I would be available for questions,
okay.
But I can certainly read my notes if that would be helpful to you.
No, that is great. My apologies for getting a little bit confused that at this hour. So let's just go to member questions then. It's obviously a simple change. I suspect you, maybe I'll just have you, Representative Hicks, and perhaps your testifier, just describe a little bit about the difference, about what the constraint is. We obviously want to have as much money be going to support vulnerable people as we can. If you could just talk about the challenge of the 4% and why there's the justification to say, hey, we need to have 10% go to administrative costs.
Absolutely. Thank you, Mr. Chair. First, I want to thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Hicks and this committee for establishing the grant to address diaper need in Minnesota. The grant has been game-changing for us. It's enabled us to expand into greater Minnesota. We were previously focused exclusively on the Twin Cities, and also to increase our annual diaper distributions by 250%. And new data shows that diaper need is now affects one in two families. One in two families is diaper insecure, so the timing of the legislation was very fortuitous. In terms of the exact question that you asked, the Diaper Bank of Minnesota has incurred several new expenses as a result of our statewide expansion. For example, we moved into a new warehouse. We had previously been in several different self-storage units at a self-storage facility, which was less expensive. But we really were at a point where we needed to move into a warehouse. Previously, our rent was just over $14,000. It's now just under $60,000 for the 5,000 square foot warehouse space that we occupy. That's a 410% increase in our expenses. Another example, insurance. Our insurance is up 304% from $1,560 to $4,749. This change in our insurance coverage pertains to our contract with DHS. There were several new forms of insurance we were required to take on that we previously did not have. Additionally, our state contract prohibits us from collecting admin fees from our partners. In our old program model, we collected admin fees from our community partners to help offset the admin costs of distributing diapers. The fact that we're unable to collect that this year amounts to a loss of about $15,000 of income. So altogether, the net impact on our organization is around $88,000 annually. But the 4% restriction on what is called admin costs prevents us from using state money to cover what are, in fact, operational costs, programmatic costs, in fact. 4% equates to just $21,720 annually, which is less than one quarter of what is actually needed. And increasing the restriction to 10% would provide more flexibility within the grant to cover the true cost of distributing 2.5 million diapers annually.
Thanks so much. So just we'll see if there are questions the members have for the testifier for Representative Hicks. And Vice Chair Keeler, yeah. And no need to, but go for it. Vice Chair Keeler.
Well, I want to. Thank you. I love this program. It was one of the things that I'm a licensed ICWA mom, and I get a lot of babies, and I realized that a lot of them were housed with me. You know, they came with diaper sores and stuff, and so that's the lack of access to diapers is so important. And so one of the things that you guys communicated with me was your geographic spread. Mm-hmm. I really appreciate that. Is any of the cost increased because you're spreading border to border? Can you talk about like what that looks like now and maybe what some more expansion? I know I would love access in Moorhead. We're working on that. But mm-hmm. Is it staff expansion a part of this?
Due to cancer.
Thank you, Vice Chair Keeler. So just to make sure I understand the question, so the cost of, perhaps you could ask the question clarify. Again just for clarity.
Sure. To be able to do this border to border, I assume that there's an increase of cost. Mm-hmm. In the ask that you're asking us for, the geographic spread, is that part of this cost increase?
Peter Kanzer.
I think the answer is no. The cost, there is an additional cost of spreading border to border, of course, expanding outside the Twin Cities metro area certainly incurred a cost. The cost of the diapers themselves, diapers and wipes, to be shipped to partners around the state of Minnesota is covered by the amount of the grant. Hmm. The place that we're bumping up against is the cost of actually distributing the diapers, the actual operational costs of getting the diapers out to those communities. So to get a wider geographical spread, yes, I think, you know, additional funds would be necessary, but what we're bumping up against is just the limitation of 4% in what is being called admin costs, what are not actually admin costs but operational costs, to support that distribution. Does that answer your question?
Mr. Keeler.
Thank you.
Okay. Sounds like that's good. And then Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Chair Pinto. And kind of a question I have is, is the organization, are they doing the warehousing and the distribution of the diapers?
Your hands are.
Thank you. In fact, We warehouse the diapers for our Twin Cities community partners, our smaller Twin Cities partners. And with our much, much larger organizations, both in greater Minnesota as well as in the Twin Cities, because the quantity of diapers that we are providing to them is so large, we are having them directly shipped from our vendors to those community partners. Over time, we hope to increase the number of small partners that we serve.
Representative Nelson.
Okay, you know, thank you, and I think you probably maybe inadvertently answered my next question without me even asking it. There's a pretty big company that does a lot of warehousing and distribution. They even have their own trucks, and I didn't know if you know, and I think in greater Minnesota maybe they are utilized, but. Just thinking of like, well, how can we make this more affordable? Because, you know, when your rent goes up, your cost goes up, you know, when you're the warehouse, are there others, you know, whether you want to call them industry partners or whatever, or, you know, warehousing, you know, places that, you know, are, and maybe it's not allowed to be able to do this, but, you know, just, you know, thinking of distribution companies that are, you know, that are around that could be a partner with this and be able to help with that, but at the same time, I don't know if the, you know, delivering to home or if it's something that they come in and, you know, get them directly. Maybe it's some of both, but I think, you know, just looking at trying to understand this and seeing how we can make this more streamlined. So thank you.
Good. Was there a question or more of a comment?
I'm not really sure. I think more of a comment.
More of a comment. So. Okay. Representative Zalesikar.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Representative Hicks. I, too, understand and appreciate this program. Am I correct to say, then, it's the added costs are really, I'm assuming there's a added cost, the price per square foot. Sounds like the building space has increased in the Twin Cities for the warehouse, if I'm understanding this right. And so the costs are higher to rent that space, however many square feet it is, as opposed to what you had before. And with that higher space comes higher rents. I don't know what your square footage, has your square footage price increased from what you paid before? And how substantial was your rent increase for your square footage?
Can I just clarify something? Because I think there's been some confusion somewhere. So I just sort of want to reset us. There's no change in the cost. They're asking to be able to use a little bit more money to cover those expenses. They aren't coming to us and asking for more money. So I do just want to sort of clarify that. The other thing is that I think it's important to remember that sometimes we try new stuff and to help people, and that's awesome, but we are just estimating when we do that. And this organization ran very lean and continues to run very lean. And so when they came and asked last year, they were like, we need 4%, which is... for admin, but admin, when we wrote the grant sort of, or when we wrote the bill, we sort of included operationals in admin. And a lot of times in grants, there's admin costs and then there's operational costs. Well, we put them all in one bucket and gave them 4% to do all of that, which is way less than what we do in most cases. And they have done it. They've done it super well, and they've expanded, and they've provided diapers to more people across the state of Minnesota. And now they're coming to us, and they're saying, so we tried to be as conservative as possible, and we missed the mark just a little bit. So can we shift some money so we can continue to do this great work? And I am so excited that they have done the work that they've done and that they've come and said, we just need a little shift. And so I just want to sort of reground us in that what they've done and what they're doing and what they're asking us to do.
Thank you for the clarification, Representative Hicks. Representative Zalesikar, you had the...
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Representative Hicks. And I understand. My question was just, it looks to me like it's the space. You increased your space. So...
Deirdre, maybe we get clarification on that. Deirdre Kanzer, can you just...
Thank you, Chair Pinto. There are several expenses that increased as a result of our expansion. Rent is one example, and our square footage essentially tripled in that new space. I don't know, because of where we were before, what the price per square foot was. That's not how they communicated that to us. But But certainly our space usage has increased. And, you know, insurance being another one of those examples. Previously, our budget was below a certain threshold where we did not need to have an audit because we were such a small organization. Now with this influx of money, we have to pay for an audit. And there are just several things like that. Staff hours have increased. You know, there are a whole range of things, while at the same time one of our previous forms of income has been reduced or eliminated.
And we do need to keep moving, I'm afraid. So
yeah.
So thank you. So we're back to Representative Lesnikar.
No further questions.
Okay, thank you so much. Good. And I will just want to clarify something Representative Hicks said. I actually think the organization did not even come with the 4%. I think you had a different ask originally, and this sort of came out in the crazy conference committee process. So even the 4% wasn't something that but I do agree you certainly were estimating conservatively. So final comments then to the bill's author before we move on. Representative Hicks.
I just want to thank the organization for all the great work they've done, and I hope that we can do some shifting so that they can continue that great work into the future.
Thank you so much. This is part of our terrific work to help support babies and their parents, too. So with that, Representative Hicks renews her motion that House File 3678 be referred to the General Register. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Okay. The motion passes. You're on your way. Thank you so much for your work. To the Diaper Bank. Really appreciate it.
Thank you, Chair Pinto and committee.
Thanks so much. And then Representative Akam, you are up next. Am I wrong about this? Yes, it is Representative Akam. Yep. And so if Vice Chair Carroll, if you wouldn't mind moving House File 4312 to bring that before us.
So move.
Thank you. And then Representative Akam, welcome to our committee. Glad to have you. I think this is your first time with us.
It is my first time.
Okay.
It's great to be here. You guys meet early.
Yeah, we've noticed, believe me. those of us who are not,
you've heard that.
The many of us who are not morning people, yes, have struggled. That's our burden. And then Representative Akam, you have a DE1 amendment, and I assume you'd like that advanced as well. Okay.
Thank
so Vice Chair Kuehl, if you'd be willing to move the DE1 amendment. Thank you. And so, members, this will just put the bill in the form the author wishes. I'm thinking we probably should just, if it's okay, we'll just adopt this, and then you can present the bill. So just seeing any questions or anything. But otherwise, all in favor of approval of the D1 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. And so, Representative Akam, the bill is in the form that you wish, at least for now. We'll talk about that.
That's right.
And so if you can please present your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I appreciate the opportunity to present House File 4312 as amended. This bill was born out of an issue that came to me from a constituent. They reached out to share a very personal story that their family had been dealing with that involved child abuse at a day camp in the hope of making a change to protect other children and families. When a child is abused in any way, it's a tragedy. We want to make sure that that child and family gets the support they need to deal with the situation. And when that abuse happens in a group setting like a school or a camp, don't we also have an obligation to notify other families that they may need to be having conversations with their children to ensure they were not also impacted by this abuser? The incident impacting my constituent occurred at a day camp, which is not licensed or certified by the Department of Human Services or the Department of Education, like schools and child care facilities are. Though many working parents in today's busy world look to day camps to act as child care, especially during long breaks from school. In my constituent situation, there was no communication about the incident with other families until much later. The opportunity to ensure their children were not also impacted was lost. The intent of House File 4312 is to require notification of impacted families at day camps in situations where abuse has occurred. We want kids at camps to get the same protections as children in schools and daycare facilities. And before I hand off for testimony, I want to show my gratitude to Chair Pinto for giving us this hearing today, in spite of what we learned yesterday. As we were reviewing comments and language from the Department of Human Services with the intent of modeling this bill on how similar situations are handled in schools and daycare facilities, we discovered that what we thought was a requirement for notifying families in situations of abuse doesn't really exist. We learned that from both DHS and MDE, they give licensees, and I'm quoting from statute, discretionary authority to notify families of other kids in a facility where the alleged abuse took place. It makes it challenging to give a higher requirement of day camps than we have for our schools and daycare facilities. And yet we also know that in my constituent situation, leaving it to discretion did not have the outcome that any of us would want or have expected. So, Mr. Chair and members, I encouraged you to, there's a letter that was included in your packets, and I encourage you to take a look at that. And I do have a testifier, Marsha Milken, Executive Director of Minnesota Children's Alliance, that's here to present also.
Thank you so much. Yeah, please make your way up, Ms. Milken, and thanks, Representative Akam. And we'll address further the point that you just made about kind of how this proposal fits in with other statutes. But as you get settled in, yeah, if you can please identify yourself. And just as you are getting ready to proceed, I should have noted we've asked all the testifiers today to keep their remarks to under 2 minutes if they can, just given the number of bills. But so glad to have you with us, and identify yourself, and then please proceed.
Good morning, Chair Pinto and committee members. My name is Marsha Milliken, and I serve as the Executive Director of the Minnesota Children's Alliance. We're a coalition of children's advocacy centers and multidisciplinary teams dedicated to providing protection, advocacy, justice, and healing to all child abuse victims and their non-offending caregivers. Our mission centers around the safety and well-being of children, and each year, Minnesota's children's advocacy centers provide vital services to over 3,000 children who've reported abuse. These services include conducting forensic interviews, providing advocacy for both the child and non-offending caregivers, connecting families with mental health services, and facilitating medical evaluations to assure children that their bodies are okay and to collect possible evidence. I'm here today to lend our full support to House File 4312, a critical piece of legislation aimed at shielding our children from the horrors of abuse. As a concerned citizen and someone deeply invested in the welfare of our community's youngest members, I urge you to consider the importance of this matter. The grim reality is that 1 in 10 children and youth will fall victim to sexual violence before reaching the age of 18, underscoring the pressing need for action. Recent statistics have shown the alarming prevalence of child abuse within youth-serving organizations. Among these cases, 63% involve verbal abuse, 35% involve physical abuse, and 6% involve sexual violence. It is deeply troubling to note that 70% of child sex abusers have between 1 and 9 victims, emphasizing the urgency of addressing this issue. So if one child reports being abused in a program, it's feasible that the child is not a lone victim. There may be others. Predators often exploit opportunities to access children, especially within youth-serving organizations, preying on the innocence and vulnerability of our youth. Our collective responsibility is to implement measures that effectively thwart their intentions and protect our children from harm. As parents, caregivers, and advocates, we have a moral imperative to ensure the safety of our children in every setting. Empowering parents with information about abuse occurring within programs and organizations is critical. House File.
We need to wrap up, afraid. Yeah, thank you.
Okay. House File 4312 represents a vital step towards bolstering the protection of our children. I urge you to support House File 4312. Let's send the message that safety and well-being of our children are non-negotiable priorities.
Thank you so much, Ms. Milliken. Yeah, thanks. Looking to see if there are other, and I should have done this earlier, if there are other members of the public who wish to testify on the bill at this point, and not seeing any. And so we'll just clarify what Representative Akam had spoken about before, and thank you so much, Ms. Milliken. Appreciate it. Is that the original draft of the bill made the level of reporting the same for public recreation programs, as for schools, et cetera, and then the DE would actually have a higher level of reporting and notification. And so probably this is something that will need a little bit of work to see what we can do. Representative Akam, more comments that you want to make on that?
Well, just exactly that, that because of the inconsistencies, there needs to be some work on the language, and thankfully there's still some time yet to work on that.
Okay, that sounds good, and so we're glad to have you do that. Representative Hicks, we'll start off
with you. I just want to say this is terrifying. Terrifying. I send my children to unlicensed day camps all the time because, you know, I have a job. I'm like terrified. I had no idea that there was this loophole, and thank you, Representative, for closing it. And thank you for your community to coming forth and bringing light to this concern.
Thank you, Representative Hicks. Representative Hudson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Akam. Mm-hmm. Great work digging into the details, closing this loophole. I very much appreciate the fact that with this bill, we're acknowledging the irreplaceable and vital role that parents play. It should go without saying, it doesn't always, but I appreciate the fact that this bill focuses on that. Notifying parents is the way to go.
Thank you, Representative Hudson. Representative Hemmingson-Yeager.
I'm just kind of curious, any reason, do you know the history, like why it was discretionary in the beginning?
Well, and to confirm, well, it's, yeah, because this, right now it's discretionary for schools, and there's no, and other facilities, and then, well, yeah, we maybe get some clarification. Maybe we'll direct to Ms. Mock to sort of give us some context here, if that's okay with both representatives. Ms. Mock, if you can.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Annie Mock with House Research. Just to clarify, in the bill, it is still discretionary to provide the notice to families other than the family of the victim. So it is mandatory to report, to send notification to the family of the child who is alleged to be abused, but it is discretionary to send the notification to other families. And that is consistent with what is in current law for schools and other facilities.
Representative Hemmingson-Yeager, back to you if that...
That's helpful. Thank you.
Okay. Yeah, we're, and if there's other members, but what we're, so what we're sorting out then is Representative Akam came with this concern about recreation programs and, you know, unlicensed programs, et cetera. And the thinking was to make that be the same as schools and other facilities, but then actually it turns out for schools, it's discretionary. And so one of the things to figure out is, would we want to actually make a switch more broadly? And that's the thing that we're needing to think through, because it raised some complexities, right? But also, I imagine, a need as well. Representative Nelson, you're up next.
Well, thank you, Chair Pinto. And I think maybe Ms. Mock can answer this question. But is, if I'm understanding, this takes it, in the DE, there's a requirement that goes beyond current policy for schools, or just not following fully here. I think I am, but maybe not. So
let's get that clarified. Ms. Mock, if you can help with that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So the DE follows the same policies as current law, where it's a mandatory notification to the family of the child who's alleged to be abused, and it's a discretionary notification to other families of children in the same program.
Well, Ms. Mock, when you say it's current law for schools.
Oh, sorry, current law for schools and other facilities.
Okay, so the DE1, as I think the original bill would have done as well, makes recreation programs be treated the same as schools.
Correct.
Ms. Mock, okay, thank you. Representative Nelson, thank you. Representative Perez Vega, you're up next.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Akam. I am baffled because I would bring this up, and I'm so great that you authored, and I'm serving as a co-author on this. I worked in recreational and youth programming throughout our cities in the metro area, and just thinking about the testimony that we heard in children and families with a testifier that is from St. Paul, Mercedes Urobo, the fact that, you know, rec centers are hiring people without even going through a deep background check, or let alone getting complaints while these people are working under their administration, where things could be prevented. These things can be prevented, and they are happening. So just hearing from both sides of the aisle that our main duty here is to keep our kids safe and ensuring that laws like this do pass. So I just want to make an approach that this is, yes, terrifying, and it's happening right next door. And we must be committed to our kids and, most importantly, to our communities to make sure that these spaces that our children are participating and that folks like myself years ago are working at are safe for the entire body of administration as well.
Thank you so much. Chair, Representative Akam.
Mr. Chair, thank you. I just wanted to circle back to Representative Hemmingson-Yeager's point about discretion and how it is in current for child care facilities and schools. And I do think there is a representative from DHS here to maybe be able to speak to the existing statute committee might be.
I think since we've got our staff here, I think I just as soon, if we're talking about current law, we'll do that, and then if necessary, because, yeah, it's we've got the expertise on that. Representative Khatiza Watoon was up next, and we'll need to move on relatively soon, and because I'm expecting, I know Representative Akam's going to be working on this a bit and then coming back very likely. Representative Khatiza Watoon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Akam, for bringing our attention to this. I think that it needs to just be said that so many of the systems and organizations that exist in the world are built and structured to protect the people working within these systems. I grew up in the Catholic Church. Many of us are aware of what has happened systematically in the years going on. And it's not just the Catholic Church. It's many churches. It's many programs. We know that, you know, abuse happens in so many systems, and if we don't shine a light on the things that have happened and could still happen and make sure that people have the information to make really important decisions, then it just perpetuates these difficulties, and it's up to us to make the change.
Thank you, Representative Khatiza Watoon. Back to you, Representative Akam, for final thoughts here.
I thank the committee's indulgence today, and I really appreciate the comments all around the table. And we will continue to work on this to get it in a place that can be meaningful and give us the protections that we expect and deserve.
And I'd urge members with a particular interest in the bill, which I think includes quite a few of us, to be in touch with Representative Akam as she's working this out. There's this basic question of kind of matching what's happening in schools. What are we thinking about that? And I think this has shown a light on that issue that some of us may not have been aware of. So please be in touch with her. Thanks all. So with that, the chair lays over House File 4312 as amended. Representative Perez-Vega, you're up now. And Representative Perez-Vega, she heads up, moves House File 4165 to bring that before the committee. This is a bill with a cost, and so we won't be able to act on it today, but we're going to hear it and discuss it, and a really worthy thing. Representative Perez-Vega, I don't think there's an amendment, and so please begin to present your bill as soon as you're ready.
I'm going to lower this seat, I feel like.
Yeah. Good.
Quite a big
get in the right
there,
spot.
You know?
Yep.
I was more of a point guard, not a center. yes, I'd like to move forward with the HF 4165, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I mean, we've got a lot of snapping happening here in children and families. I know that throughout the past week, so we're going to continue to snap. HF 4165 would restore funding for the state SNAP outreach grant program in the next biennium, helping to avoid a funding cliff at a time when more Minnesotans than ever are experiencing food insecurity. This program was created by the legislature in 2023 to support the work of organizations across the state helping enroll eligible individuals in SNAP. Originally included in the governor's budget at $3 million per year, funding was dropped to $1 million a year for fiscal year 24-25, and $500,000 a year starting in fiscal year 26-27. In order for DHS and eligible organizations to prepare for the FY25 grant process, funding must be restored in the 2024 legislative session, which is why this legislation is a priority for Second Harvest Heartland and other SNAP outreach organizations in Minnesota. This legislation also brings federal dollars back to Minnesota through a 50% match for SNAP outreach activities. This USDA program has been in existence since the mid-2000s and provides a 50% reimbursement to organizations participating in the SNAP outreach program with no limit to how much money a state can draw down. investing another $1 million in the next biennium, then would be matched by $500,000 in federal funds, money we are otherwise leaving on the table. I don't think I need to give a snap background as we've been kind of snapping around. I know we're limited to time, but I just want to, you know, make it draw a point that the new Minnesota SNAP outreach program is helping eligible Minnesotans enroll in SNAP, but that the funding is going to be cut in half in the next biennium if we do not act to avoid that cliff. And I'm trying to ensure that we don't have folks that are being pushed off of that cliff in the next upcoming years. There's as many as 30 organizations across the state who help eligible Minnesotans apply and enroll in SNAP, but without this additional support, they cannot reach everyone in need of assistance. These programs are served throughout our state, but in particularly, I have a large heart for the program that happens in my community at the neighborhood house, where we see that line go around the block to be have accessibility for SNAP programming and food. At this time, I'd like to encourage members in that community to come down to testify.
Yeah, good. Yeah, let's have both your testifiers come down. I'm going to have to ask you to keep your comments to under 2 minutes, and my apologies for that. Once you get settled in, you can identify yourself, share your preferred pronouns if you're comfortable with that, and please proceed with your testimony as you once you get settled in. We're adjusting the lot of chairs.
We've got some today. Burger diner stools
yeah,
over here.
Yeah, all good. Okay. Yeah, so whoever's going to go first, please identify yourself. Proceed. Not sure who's going to go first.
Okay. All right. Keani Bemis, they, them, a food market intake in Neighborhood House.
Yeah, please, yeah, and so proceed with your testimony.
I'd like to start by thanking the chair and assembled committee for coming here today. Again, my name is Keani Bemis. I'm a food market intake worker in Neighborhood House. We are a 127-year-old organization in St. Paul that works alongside families that provide their basic needs and also the resources they need to thrive. Visits to food shelves in Minnesota have been on the rise. As Hunger Solutions has reported, in 2022, there was 5.5 million visits to food shelves, and that has risen to 7.5 million in 2023. A record high for the state. I believe we can attribute some, if not most of this, to the sunsetting of emergency SNAP benefits, along with the minimum for seniors being decreased to just $23. In March of 2023, when people received their last eSNAP payment, visits to our Wellstone Center food market rose dramatically. Today, we are serving roughly 1,500 unique families per month, which is almost double the number we were serving last year. To highlight the importance of SNAP and the benefits of investing and expanding the program, I would like to share a story that our SNAP outreach specialist, Paul Key, who is in the room with us today, has shared with me recently. In the summer of 2023, Paul was conducting SNAP outreach at one of our fresh produce distribution events, and when she met a mother of four children who'd shared that her husband recently returned to school while working a part-time job. She herself was on call at the time. The mother was curious if her family was eligible for SNAP, so Paul helped her apply, and roughly a month later, the family was approved. However, while the family still has immense gratitude for the work that Paul has done and the support she provided, they still have to rely on our food market to make ends meet because the cost of food is so high. Every day at Neighborhood House and many other community organizations, we work tirelessly to help communities make ends meet and help them reach those basic needs. And we know that the current SNAP allotments are not enough. People are already at that cliff. People are already hanging off of that cliff that Representative Perez Vega had mentioned. And today I'm asking you to support House File 4165 and take this step to help support our community in the way they deserve. Thank you.
Thank you so much for your testimony and for the other testifier. If you can please identify yourself and proceed.
Absolutely. Thank you, Chair Pinto and members of the committee. My name is Mesa Siebert, and I am the Neighbor Services Outreach Manager at Second Harvest Heartland Food Bank. We are pleased to support HF 4165, which will support organizations across the state by providing education, information, and assistance to Minnesotans applying for SNAP. Since the start of the pandemic, I have managed the Second Harvest Heartland outreach team. We conduct SNAP outreach in the community. We are one of about 29 other SNAP outreach grantees in the state, and together we cover all 87 Minnesota counties.
As a grantee of the state, my team helps inform and educate Minnesotans on all things SNAP and food access. We explain the challenging 10-page SNAP application and make it digestible for folks to understand. We also help break down stigma around SNAP. Often we hear from our seniors about their hesitancy to enroll in SNAP because they do not wish to pay with the old coupon booklets that you might have remembered from times past, which is now an EBT card. They worry their neighbors will identify them as food insecure. This is just one of the reasons why only 2 out of 5 seniors who are eligible for SNAP participate. It's also a major reason why Minnesota ranks 35th in the nation. Out of 50 states, we're 35th in SNAP participation. We are leaving federal dollars on the table, resources which are spent in local communities to benefit local businesses and local economies. This is why this legislation is so important. There are many barriers standing between our community members and SNAP access. Even working with the other SNAP outreach grantees in Minnesota, we cannot be everywhere. We need local organizations with insight and understanding of their immediate communities to support their educational efforts. Your support of this funding will help us reach across Minnesota. It will allow the community organizations in your hometowns to meet your constituents where they're at and help them understand their options to feed their families. Food banks like Second Harvest Heartland do all we can to make sure Minnesotans do not go hungry. But for every meal provided by our food bank, SNAP provides 9. It's really the most effective anti-hunger program in the nation. But too many are unaware of the benefits or unable to access them. House File 4165 would change that by avoiding a SNAP outreach funding cliff in the next biennium. And we respectfully ask for your support. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you so much. Is there anybody else in the public who wishes to testify on the bill? Not seeing anyone, so move to member discussion or questions. Representative Hudson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I may have to appeal to your indulgence on this because it's a question for the testifier. Oh, she's walking away.
Oh, yeah. Come on back then. Well, no, that's all right.
And it's just out of sheer curiosity, there was one thing that kind of snagged my brain as you were testifying.
Yeah.
10-page application. Can you kind of walk us through, like, that sounds like it's harder than doing your taxes.
Yes, Ms. Kiefer, please.
It is. It's quite in-depth. It's quite confusing. There's a lot of legalese in there. Talk about being a barrier to somebody who has a fifth grade education level, who maybe doesn't have English as their first language. 10 pages. It's intense. For seniors, they have a lighter, littler, more, efficient. It just went up to 8 pages for seniors. So it's a huge barrier in SNAP. So we help digest that for folks, educate them what these questions mean, what they're looking at here. It's a lot to digest.
Are we talking about work requirements, income eligibility, all those sorts of things?
Yes, income eligibility, household makeup. After the fact, you have to provide supporting documentation as well. There's a lot of hoops to jump through just to submit an application.
Representative Hudson.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I think it's going to go to Vice Chair Keeler.
Thank you, Chair Pinto. Thank you, Representative. As a fellow SNAP squad member, right, we really are trying to do this. I just want to reiterate that this outreach opens up federal money that comes to us. So, like, I think a lot of times we're looking at the state budget, that this is just like the bridge to open us up to federal money into our state. So I just want to make sure we don't miss that part. And thank you so much for doing this. This is really the key work that's done, especially in greater Minnesota and some of these communities. When you have individuals that are food insecure, there's usually a lot of other things that are going on in their life. And sometimes these are the most important people that they can connect with. So continue the great work that you're doing. And I just emailed to sign on as an author, so co-author. Thank you.
Appreciate it.
There you go. Not seeing anybody else, and so Representative Perez-Vega, back to you.
You know, I just want to thank our testifiers. I want to thank our co-authors and the folks in the SNAP movement throughout the state body. I just want to remind folks that this is a win-win for Minnesotans, all Minnesotans, from my district to yours, that are in the need to keeping their bellies full. And I also want to just appreciate the question that my colleague here, Representative Hudson, stated. Yeah, that application process is a process, and it's to ensure that, you know, all the I's are dotted and the T's are crossed so that we can vet the grant process of where who's going to be getting the SNAP. And and just a little background in closing, that I used to do translation interpretation services as a teenager for a lot of veterans, believe it or not, whose language was their second language was English. And I just remember them being able to have accessibility to programs like this because they were dealing with all of the initiatives and barriers that come with PTSD. And so I just want to highlight that memory of, you know, the Hmong and the Hmong veterans as well as the Latino veterans who this program really assisted, and I was able to put some food in their fridge monthly. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Representative Perez Vega. Terrific. We'll be helping to feed folks. And so with that, the chair lays over House File 4165. Going to continue to keep an eye on it. And we've got two further food-related bills. Representative Hemmingson-Yeager, you're heading on up. And there's a couple videos that we're going to hope to try to play, so we're going to do our best with that. As you get settled then, we'll see what we can do. Representative Hemmingson-Yeager moves House File 4150 to bring that before the committee. Again, it does have a cost. I don't believe, Representative Hemmingson-Yeager, that there is... And, of course, there is an amendment. Every time I say that, I'm always wrong, whichever direction it is. So, Representative Hemmingson-Yeager, are you moving the A1 amendment?
Yes, please.
Okay. And it looks like that is simply an appropriation filling that. So, yeah, in addition to the if you could just tell us what we're looking at.
Thanks. Yes. Thank you.
Please do.
Thank you. Good morning. Thank you, everybody, for your time and attention. The A1 amendment was developed out of some long, thoughtful conversations and really considering the whole food chain. I would like to do an extra thanks to Vice Chair Keeler for your interest, your expertise, and your advice. And that is simply that in addition to the food banks, that we are also making sure that we have some funding for the food shelves.
And so any discussion to the A1 amendment put in the bill in the form the author wishes? Not hearing any, all in favor of approval of the A1 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. Representative Hemmingson-Yeager, to your bill.
Thank you. So the whole bill now, we've been hearing a lot about the all-time high need for food, and it goes without saying. This bill complements the work of others by focusing on the puzzle piece of food banks and now food shelves. Food banks are kind of similar to a wholesaler in that they're there to fill the need at food shelves at a price that's cheaper than food shelves can get by groceries at a grocery store. I would like to just kind of keep my comments brief, as three of the five food banks in Minnesota are scheduled to testify. And this basically establishes an ongoing funding mechanism, which I think is a demonstration of how we as Minnesotans take this seriously and have a serious approach to solving this problem.
Sounds good. So, yeah, let's get your testifiers up, maybe at least your first one. And again, I'm going to have to ask folks to, I think actually we just have the one in-person testifier. The other ones are via video. And so, yeah, Ms. Colburn, what are we thinking here?
I was thinking maybe we'll try the video first.
Try the video first. Okay, we're going to do that first. See if we can make that work. Well, we can see it at least. We're going to see if we can get the sound.
Hi, I'm Cindy Novak-Belter, the Executive Director of North Country Food Bank in East Grand Forks, Minnesota. North Country Food Bank serves Northwest and West Central Minnesota, 21 counties in all. We provide food to 220 agency partners across the region that are helping people in need. And the need has really increased. Like all food banks across the state, we are experiencing this same trend. Most of our agency partners are reporting client visits increasing by 30 to 50%. We've seen it ourselves.
in our own mobile food distributions. For example, in a small town of Bagley, Minnesota, we used to have 100 families that would show up for a mobile distribution. Now, it's more like 250 to 300 families every single time. We've also had to hire third-party carriers to help deliver all the food. The agency partners have increased their orders so much, it's been overloading our trucks and our routes. So we've had to add on third-party carrier help to make sure we get our deliveries made. This is why it's so important, and we're asking you to help support Bill HF-4150. This will help food banks across the state of Minnesota get closer to meeting the need. Remember, if you are hungry, nothing else matters. We really need your help and ask for your support on Bill HF-4150. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. And we could hear that. It's a little bit tough to hear that in the room. I'm hoping that that was able to be heard in the broadcast outside the room. There is a second video that's going to be played now as well. We're going to give that a try.
I'm Shay Morris, President and CEO of Second Harvest Northland. We are the food bank that provides support in 11 northeastern Minnesota counties. Today in our region, we're seeing about a 30 to 40% increase in demand at our region's food shelves, which is about 60 that we support. We know that pandemic supports that were put in place have now sunset, and the demand on the charitable sector has increased. So Tammy, one of our Northland neighbors who have recently experienced hunger, shared a story that she lost her daughter to breast cancer. She's now raising her 3 grandchildren. And she really told us how important it is that we're able to support her food needs. And she just said, I don't know what I would do without you. I'm asking you today to support HF-4150 to help support our Minnesota Food Bank Network, neighbors like Tammy, and to help us meet demand.
Okay, good stuff. Thank you, Ms. Colburn, for your hard work on that. And again, I'm hoping the folks outside the room will be able to hear those sound as well on that. Appreciate it. And we will then have the testifier. Yeah, please make your way on up. Thank you. And once you get settled in, identify yourself. Share the pronouns you prefer if you're comfortable with that, and then proceed with your testimony.
Sarah Moberg, she, her, Chief Operating Officer at Second Harvest Heartland.
Yeah, please proceed.
Chair Pinto and members of the committee, food banks serve as wholesale distributors for our region's emergency food system, sourcing food from local growers, farmers, manufacturers, grocery stores, and restaurants. We deliver this food to more than 1,500 program partners across 41 counties in Minnesota and 18 counties in western Wisconsin, providing 78% of the food distributed by hunger relief programs across the state. We also partner closely with 4 other members of the Feeding America Network, 2 of whom you just heard from. They collectively serve the other 46 counties in our state, as well as the food group, which is also based here in the Twin Cities. Food banks are able to use dollars efficiently to collect and transport donated products, like produce. We also make bulk purchases of highly in-demand products that are rarely donated. This capability ensures that we are stretching the benefit of these funds as much as possible for Minnesotans experiencing hunger. Demand for emergency food is higher than ever, meaning we are having to purchase and transport more food than ever before. We are trying to keep up, but supply simply isn't matching demand, and we can't close the gap without your help. HF-4150 would help address these challenges by creating the Minnesota Food Bank Program, which would be a long-term, reliable source of funding specifically for food purchasing and distribution, and it would provide a much-needed infusion of food at no cost into Minnesota's food shelves. Given the record demand, we're not meeting the needs of our neighbors today, and unless the fundamentals of the economy change drastically for the hundreds of thousands of Minnesotans struggling to get by, we will be unable to close the gap completely without state assistance. House File 4150 would help infuse that emergency food system with much-needed in-demand foods like produce, dairy, eggs, protein, all of which would go to food shelves at no cost. By itself, it will not close the expected meal gap completely, but every dollar would go towards ensuring fewer Minnesotans go hungry, and I hope that's a goal we can all get behind. Thank you for the honor to appear before you today, and on behalf of Second Harvest Heartland and the entire Feeding America Network, I hope we and the hundreds of thousands of Minnesotans and their families who rely on us can count on your support.
Thank you. Thanks for your testimony and for your work. Appreciate it. Are there any members of the public who wish to testify on the bill? Not seeing any, so we can move to member discussion or questions. Anything from members? Representative Zelizikar.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you. I've been to the food banks and seen the need and seen the lines, and in the communities I've been at, our church also does a route through coming through once a month, and Ruby's Pantry. And so these needs are, to your point, unless the economy changes, the gap is not changing. And it's the gap is wide, and it's widening at a very fast pace across the entire state. And so, you know, the senior citizens have less money to work with, the individuals have less to work with, and those with families are struggling to, they're working 2-3 jobs trying to make ends meet. And, you know, I 100% agree, you know, unless things change, this even this amount of money might not be enough. And so we have a significant issue here in Minnesota, and, you know, I commend the programs that are doing what they're doing, and we'll work hard to try to get close the gap in as many ways as we can. So thank you.
Thank you, Representative Zelizikar. Anything else from members at all? Just looking to see. Okay. Well, thank you so much. We'll go Representative Hemmingsen-Yeager. We'll let you close up. And definitely big needs in the state, and appreciate the going at them. But yeah, Representative Hemmingsen-Yeager, final comments.
Thank you. Yeah, I think you hit it right there. You know, big needs, and this is a really serious approach. So I'd greatly appreciate your support and your consideration.
Thank you so much. With that, then, the chair lays over House File 4150 at this time. And thank you so much to Sarah Moberg and to the folks from Second Harvest and the work that is done all throughout the state. And so, Representative Keeler, have you head on up? And as Representative Keeler heads to the front of the room, she moves House File 4517 for to bring that before the committee. And then once you're settled in, you can tell us about the bill, and then I have the sense that we're going to probably go to the video first is the hope.
That's what we're going to try.
Excellent. Okay, so Representative Keeler, once you're ready, you can tell us about the bill.
So continuing on with the food insecurity conversation and the SNAP squad moving forward, I think I just named ourselves that, by the way. So this is to open up federal eligibility for our college students. I know we talk a lot about data on who's hungry. I think it's pretty obvious that there's portions of our community that's hungry all over. Students United tells us that more than 25% of our student population struggles with food insecurities. I know this firsthand. I was a student not that long ago, but connected with other students in my school at MSUM in Moorhead. And what we know is, again, kind of similar to the work that we did in K-12, food insecurities doesn't stop at an age. It doesn't stop at a border or community. And so what this does is really just opens up some federal work requirements, again, for that federal SNAP money. This is not state money. Only state money that might be acquired is a little bit of administrative costs, and we've been able to confirm that this morning. And so what it's saying is basically we're going to add additional work requirements as a full-time student. In this bill that you read, it says four-year colleges, but we actually just did an amendment in the Senate yesterday that adds two-year colleges and tribal colleges as well for this. It also changes the language, so the eligibility requirements would be that you're Pell eligible or have a $0 or less student aid index and are enrolled full-time in those state higher education institutions. And so with that, I think we're going to try. We have a video from an MSUM student that I hope works. If not, we do have somebody that can come down and read that testimony. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Vice Chair Keeler. And so here we go. So we're going to give this a try. Thanks to Ms. Colburn.
Chair Pinto, Ranking Member Daniels, and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Nora Simondet, a student at Minnesota State University of Moorhead and a board member with Students United. More than a quarter of college students in Minnesota struggle with food insecurity, including many of my classmates at MSU Moorhead. So the SNAP bill would really help us. For example, if you didn't know, we do have food shelves on many of our campuses, including at Seymourhead. And our food shelves cannot keep up with the demand. As you may know, the SNAP bill wouldn't affect international students, but that would honestly release some room in our campus food shelves. Specifically, that would give more students be able to, international students, to use our food shelves, as well as those who have access to SNAP to be able to use them. And that would be able to help our campuses keep up with the amount of students using it. It's really important to make sure that college students are in the conversation of SNAP, as we do struggle with food insecurity. And the bill acknowledges that college students need help overall with hunger insecurity. Thank you for your time today.
Good stuff. And again, thanks, Ms. Colburn, for your hard work on the videos. And so I actually think there may be the two testifiers in person here, right? So I think Kendra Drager is the first one, Vice Chair Keeler?
Yes.
Oh, that's right. Okay, yeah. Yeah, and your second one, you should feel free to make the way up too. And then once you get settled in, feel free to identify yourself, share your pronouns that you prefer if you're comfortable with that, and then proceed with your testimony.
Yes, thank you. My name is Kendra Drager, and I use she, her pronouns. Chair Pinto, Ranking Member Daniels, and members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to testify this morning. For the record, my name is Kendra Drager. I am a student at Minnesota State University Mankato and an officer of Students United. We are excited to share why we support Representative Keeler's House File 4517. Minnesota State University Mankato has a food shelf available to all students, which is a critical resource for many of my classmates struggling with food insecurity. What's heartbreaking, though, is that we have more hungry students than our food shelf can provide for. During the 2022-2023 academic calendar, our food shelf served almost 8,500 students. For this academic year, that number is expected to eclipse 11,000 students. This isn't unique to my campus. Food insecurity impacts more than a quarter of students in Minnesota. Students United asks legislators to clarify state law and allow more students to access SNAP benefits. Minnesota lawmakers can follow the example of states like Ohio, Arizona, and Oregon in addressing this issue at the state level. Specifically, House File 4517 would clarify state law and allow students who are attending public colleges, universities, or tribal colleges and who are eligible to receive the Pell Grant and otherwise SNAP eligible to qualify for SNAP benefits. This bill would help me and students like me. I was a Pell Grant recipient during my undergraduate career at Bemidji State University, and this bill would have helped me balance the demands of studying and preparing for my master's program in cancer research while also affording food each week. In every corner of our state, students struggle to afford basic necessities and fight the ache of hunger. Lawmakers can help these students by leveraging federal dollars and passing House File 4517 at no cost to the state. We urge members to support Representative Keeler's efforts. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for your testimony. And then the other testifier here, we can get you. There you go. And please identify yourself and proceed as well.
Wonderful. Chair Pinto, Ranking Member Daniels, members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to testify today. For the record, my name is Ben Remler. I'm the Director of Government Relations for Students United. Students United represents the students of Minnesota State's seven state universities. And we're here today, as you've heard, because more than a quarter of college students are struggling with food insecurity. But access to SNAP can have a dramatic impact on those students. And we know this because we have evidence of what happens when more students are able to access SNAP. The Consolidated Appropriations Act, passed by Congress in 2021, introduced two temporary exemptions to expand post-secondary student access to SNAP during the COVID-19 public health emergency. However, with the expiration of the public health emergency, those additional requirements returned. During that period, though, of broader SNAP access, we saw the dramatic impact it can have on students. According to a report from Minnesota's Department of Human Services, SNAP served 37% more post-secondary students during this period. And of those surveyed, food insecurity decreased from 73% to 32%. Now, SNAP, of course, is a federal program, but the federal government allows states discretion in creating and defining eligible programs. And that's what this bill does. It would clarify eligibility requirements for programs to be state-approved local educational programs that qualify for the student exemption for SNAP eligibility. And this bill, as Kendra mentioned, would leverage federal dollars in doing so. We are so grateful for Representative Keeler's leadership on this bill, making sure that we fight hunger in every form and in every corner of Minnesota. Happy to field any questions, and we are grateful for this committee's time this morning.
Thank you so much. Thanks for being here and for your work. Is there any member of the public who wishes to testify? Not seeing any. And so we will go to member questions and discussion. Representative Hicks. Oh, sorry, Representative Nelson. I missed you. We'll go to Representative Hicks, that's okay, and then Representative Nelson. All right.
Thank you so much, Rep. Keeler, for bringing this bill in. I just wanted to say we know that everybody learns better when they have full bellies, and that happens in our K-12 system, but it also happens in higher ed. So I think the highlight of this is so important. So thank you so much.
Thank you, Representative Hicks. Representative Nelson, apologies. We'll go to you now.
Not a problem, Mr. Chair. And thank you for this bill. And as Representative Hicks said, you know, we all work better when our tummy is not grumbling. So, but a couple of questions I have. And the first is, I don't know how the North Star, I think that's what it's called, the North Star Act, and Pell Grants, I'm not sure if, I don't know how all that process is. Are things still filled out for Pell Grants? Is that, you know, with the North Star Act coming in last year, is that even still a relevant process? I just don't know about it.
Vice Chair Keeler or Mr. Remler, perhaps?
Yeah.
Ben Remler?
Chair Pinto, members of the committee. So the North Star Promise Act was the bill that was passed last session to allow those in Minnesota that come from a household income of $80,000 or less, tuition-free college at public institutions in Minnesota. In order to qualify for the North Star Promise Act, you have to fill out, you have to come from a family of $80,000 or less. It also included a Pell Match program. But in order to know if you qualify, you have to fill out the FAFSA or the state grant aid application. So that's its interaction with the Pell Grant.
Representative Nelson?
Okay, yeah. So thank that. That was very helpful because I wasn't sure what the application, you know, what it looked like. I didn't want to make sure that this program wasn't contingent on something that really didn't matter anymore. But yes, it does. It is still relevant, and thank you for that. And maybe to the author, I had. A couple weeks ago, I toured Lake Superior Technical College up in Duluth, and and there they have their cafeteria there. That it's a bunch of it is run by students. They provide provides food at cost to students. They're not making a profit on that. Students work in there, and it's The cafeteria was closed when I went by, but I think the meal that day was a soup and a cheeseburger or something like that, and I think it was like $4.75. I mean, you can't beat that price. But I'm wondering, there was another bill that was kind of relating to provide, served food, and I would wonder, would there be any possibility of eligibility for something like that? Being able to cook somewhere can be an issue for college students as well. And I don't know if that would be something that you would be open to, or being able to, the school cafeteria would be able to use and maybe that would be a whole complicated issue of going into that, but just an idea.
Vice Chair Keeler.
Thank you. Thank you, Representative. I actually really like that. I was just asking, so I feel like what you're asking me is like, do on-campus food sites accept SNAP? Right, that so like would, if they want a burger or kind of the hot, like opening it up right to the hot meal option, I feel like we've been talking a lot about different SNAP options here. Is that kind of what you're asking? Is would the students be able to utilize then their SNAP benefits on campus if they're not going to the cafeteria, which is already covered under food and tuition when you go to college? Is that, are we on the same page?
Representative Nelson?
Yeah.
Vice Chair Keeler.
I think that's a really great question. I don't really know the answer to it. I think we're going to look into it, and I can get back to you on it. I know that higher education, the chair waived hearing this bill, but I maybe sort of feel like I hate to, like, really change what the plan is in the middle of the plan, right? But
You know, it might be worth heading over there just to have some of those conversations, or maybe make those ads. I think that's a great question. Yep. Sorry, Chair.
No problem. Yeah, we change plans all the time, so there'd be no change. I'd be fine with, we certainly could do that, and I think it'd be no issue here, but yeah. And I don't know if there's somebody who is able to answer the question right now that is raised by Representative Nelson. I suspect we don't have anybody who has that. Well, Ms. Sunderman, we'll see what you can help us with at this point.
Mr. Chair and members, in order to be eligible for the restaurant SNAP program, the federal eligibility requirements, I believe it was vendors that are existing eligible vendors, such as grocery stores, things like that. It wouldn't be restaurants. They would have to meet the SNAP eligibility requirements, and then there would be the option of buying prepared foods at those already eligible vendors. So I would assume that a cafeteria would not be an eligible SNAP vendor under that program. So there are federal constraints.
And if there's other information, I'm sort of sensing some, looks like Mr. Dem may be heading down, if that's, let's see if he can provide some help. Yeah, we might. Thank you so much to the testifiers, and we'll see if our DHS friends are able to help answer the question. Mr. Dem?
Mr. Chair, for the record, Nick Dem with DHS. What Ms. Sunderman said was correct. I'll just add that the SNAP restaurant meals bill that this committee heard earlier, the eligibility expands it to a certain category of SNAP participants, so you have to be elderly, disabled, or homeless to qualify. So that's another added distinction I want to clarify in addition to what Ms. Sunderman said.
Okay. I want to ask a couple things. I'm not seeing other hands up at the moment, which is just ask Mr. Berg to clarify the fiscal aspect of this, that it's merely a federal cost. There's no state cost, except that it's possible there could be some administrative cost. Is that right? If you could just kind of clarify.
Mr. Chair, you got to the heart of it at the end there. The benefit here, the department and I conferred, and the students would be eligible for the federal benefit, so there's no state cost there. There is likely some programming and potentially other smaller admin costs. There is an active fiscal note, although sounds like the Senate amended it, so we'll have to check that again. But
okay, and then the other question I wanted to ask Vice Chair Keeler is just, you mentioned the Senate amendment adding 2-year in tribal. Presumably, if we move this forward, you'd want to make sure that would be included in our language in the House, I would assume. Correct, Vice Chair Keeler?
Yeah, that's correct, and adding 2-year colleges.
2-year in tribal. Okay, good. So just sort of ask our House staff. I'm sure you'll keep an eye on that, but also to make sure House staff helps remind us to have that be part of it as well as things move forward. Good. And if there's my thinking is that there wouldn't be any harm in sending this, and we're figuring this out on the fly, Vice Keeler. I don't see any harm in sending it to higher ed in case you'd want to have it heard there for some reason. That would not prevent us from advancing it just like we would if we could. You know, I don't think that prevents us in any way. As the maker of the motion, I defer to you as to whether you'd want to, and also seeing if there's anybody else having hands, not seeing that, to either continue to lay it over, or just given timing, if you think there'd be any chance you'd want to send to higher ed, we may want to just send it, which again doesn't prevent us from acting on it, whether or not they end up hearing in higher ed. But I really defer to you. We could also take a 2-minute recess or something too, but either way. So Vice Chair Keeler, final comments and anything you want to do.
Thank you, Chair Pinto. I think to follow line with what the Senate is doing, I would like to send it to higher ed. If we need to call it back, we could do that on the floor if needed.
That sounds good. And again, I would think we maybe wouldn't even need to call it back because we will have heard it and passed it on, and we can see what we want to do. Okay, that's good. So then, members, change then in the motion. It sounds like Vice Chair Keeler is moving to re-refer House File 4517 to the Committee on Higher Education. So any further questions or discussion from committee members before that vote? And then Vice Chair Keeler, then final comments before we have that vote.
When we're hungry, we're hangry, and when we're hangry, we can't learn. So would love your support. Sounds like Nelson has a great amendment coming, too.
That sounds good. Vice Chair Keeler then is renewing her motion made just a couple seconds ago to re-refer House File 4517, the Committee on Higher Education. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? That motion passes. Excellent. Thank you, Vice Chair Keeler. Thanks to all those feeding Minnesotans. We've heard several bills relating to that and to the other, and then providing diapers to them too, to represent Hicks and to their babies, so important. So members, next week is the final week before policy deadlines. Expected to be a busy week in our committee and in others as well, to be pretty jam-packed. And so please be in touch as with anything that you have on your mind, because things are getting a little bit tight here. We're going to end a little bit early, which I think is good. And one thing is, and the video links to the testimony, we had three videos played, and they have been sent out. We'll make sure that they're posted as well. With that, the committee is adjourned. Thank you.